A few years after I came back to the States, a friend of mine from college who was teaching at a college in the Midwest invited me to come and speak to his classes. He was a professor of comparative religion, and he wanted to expose his students to a real Buddhist monk. The school was something of a party school, so I didn't expect much in terms of the response. And he told me afterwards that one of the responses that the students gave was they were surprised to see a monk who was fairly intelligent and had an active mind. This is one woman said. She expected monks to be subhuman, and she was surprised to see that. I actually thought for myself. It's a fairly standard reaction among people who are attached to their passions, particularly attached to their lust. Anyone who is not giving in to lust, not following a life of lust, is a loser. All of the glamour, all the prestige, and all the intelligence seems to be on the side of those who give in to their lust. They're probably that you're able to think thoughts of sensuality, think of the things you desire, people you desire, think how you'd be able to get what you want out of the people you desire. There's a belief that there's a fair amount of intelligence that goes with that. The people who don't follow their lust tend to be the little goody-two-shoes, not all that bright. They may be wise in the sense of the wisdom of books that have little wise phrases on one on each page, but they don't have any street smarts. They don't know how to get what they want. Pictures of people kind of dried up, world weary. They simply can't get it on with other people. And it must have been when I first learned about Arahants having no passion, no aversion, no delusion. It seemed awfully dry. But I met Ajahn Phuong, other masters of the forest tradition, and the impression I came back was totally different. These were the people who were really sharp. They learned how to see that their lust and their greed and their aversion was really dumb. They had seen through it. They had figured it out. So an important part of learning to overcome your lust is just that, seeing that it requires intelligence to overcome it. And the people who give in, those are the ones who are dumb. When you change your perspective that way, it tips the balance. Because we have to admit that our defilements are pretty smart. They do figure out ways of getting what we want in the short term. And they're especially smart in making us feel that we're smart in giving into them. They're like those websites that affiliate with political parties. We all know deep down inside someplace that the political parties don't care much about most people. They care about their wealthy donors. We should go to their websites, and they will tell you the latest put-downs of the other side, latest in-jokes about the other side, so you feel that you're on their side, they're on your side. And we willingly allow ourselves to be duped this way. You have to realize that the real intelligence comes in learning how not to be duped, learning how to figure out why is it that greed, aversion, delusion, lust have such power over the mind. Where does their power come from? And if you can learn to see this as an intelligent quest, a real good use of your intelligence to learn how to get past these things, that's half the battle right there. Because it does require figuring things out. We're not here just to watch things come and go and say, oh yes, they come and go. And the pleasure of lust doesn't last very long, so you might as well give up. That's like saying the pleasure of eating doesn't last very long, so you might as well just stop eating. If you don't have something better to go to, you just keep coming right back. So that's the first step, is learning how to get a good, strong concentration, realizing that there is a sense of well-being that can be immediate, visceral, right here, as you spread feelings of ease, refreshment through the body, simply by the way you breathe, simply by the way you relate the rest of the body to the areas where it's obvious that you're breathing. Do you begin to see that, yes, the whole body is breathing? That gives you some support. But then the rest of the work is figuring things out. You see this in the teachings of the Forest of Johns. I've said many times during my time with the John Fung, there are a lot of things he wouldn't explain. He'd tell me that I was doing things wrong, setting up his hut, arranging things for him, or arranging a construction project outside in the monastery. But then I was doing something wrong. He wouldn't say what the right way was to do it. It was up to me to figure it out. And as he said, the purpose in that was to get me used to figuring things out for myself. As he said, if everything were handed to me on a platter, ready made, ready solved, I wouldn't develop any intelligence. I wouldn't be able to solve problems on my own. Because when you're off meditating on your own, there are a lot of times when something comes up and there's nobody you can run to. You have to figure things out right then and there. And the Buddha gives you some questions to ask. When lust comes, where does it come from? And he uses the word origination. What is its origination? Origination isn't the object outside. It's something inside the mind itself. There's a thirst. There's a sense of lack. And then there's the thought that, well, I could fill in this lack with thoughts of sensuality. Even though I can't get what I want, I can fantasize. Of course, fantasizing leads the mind to think more and more in terms of actually acting on those fantasies. So what's the origination? And then how does it pass away? Does it stay constant or does it come and go? There are times when you'll notice that it's coming and going. But the fact that it comes back makes you feel, well, it must be deeply entrenched there. But maybe that's not the case. Maybe it goes away. It can last only for a certain amount of time. And there's something in the mind that wants it back. What is that something? What is that desire? This is where you start looking into the allure. What do you find attractive? On the one hand, this is why we have the analysis of the 32 parts of the body, starting with your own body. Because that's the body you're most familiar with. But also, as the Buddha said, it's the one that you're most attracted to. Ask yourself, what in there is it that is really all that attractive? If you take it apart, part by part, there's really nothing. So when this body isn't attractive, how can you assign attractiveness to another body? Same sort of stuff. You have a digestive system with all the digestive juices and the things that come out from digestion. Well, the other person has that too. What's the big deal? But then you dig a little bit deeper and you realize, well, it's not necessarily the object that has the allure. There's your role as someone who can think up these thoughts, or who in your fantasies is clever enough to get somebody else attracted to you. So it's not just lust operating there, there's a lot of pride. As I said earlier, there's that sense of intelligence. I can figure this out, how to get what I want. But then what do you really get? This is where you have to think about the drawbacks. As the Buddha said, there is a happiness that can come by getting past your passion, past your sensuality. The first step, of course, was with the concentration, but then there's a higher well-being, happiness, pleasure. The Pali word sukha covers all of that. that comes with the deathless. And everybody who attained the deathless, they saw how stupid I was not to go for this. That's why people who gain genuine awakening don't become proud over the fact, because they've seen through their stupidity and seen how stupid they were for so long. They hold that in mind as an ideal. You haven't seen the Third Noble Truth yet, but that's the whole point of the Buddha's talking about the Four Noble Truths, because there is that possibility for the cessation of suffering. And it's not just a lack of suffering, but it's a very positive well-being. And anything that stands in the way of that has a lot of drawbacks. This is why we bring out the perception of inconstancy, stress, not self, to help underline the drawbacks of your fantasies, so you can develop this passion for them and gain release, escape from them. The Buddha compares sensuality to a fetter. It's like being in prison. And they've managed to make the prison a nice enough prison so you feel like you're actually pretty clever being there. But it's a prison nonetheless. So when you get past it, you've escaped. So you have to change your allegiance to part of the mind that thinks you're smart for indulging in sensuality. You have to show it, you know, that's the dumb side, the smart side is what can figure things out. Try to be active in taking this as a challenge. Why is it that I fall for these things? Why is it that they keep having power over me? There was a famous French intellectual who decided to do a history of sexuality. It's going to be a multi-volume series. And after doing a couple of years of research on it, he finally decided that sex was the most boring topic of all. It sounded cool in the beginning, but it was just the same stuff over and over again. Whatever variety there is in it gets pretty repetitive pretty fast. But it's freedom from sensuality. There's no boredom there at all. So see it as a challenge, as I said. There'll be setbacks. But just make yourself up for the challenge. Say, this is a good use of your intelligence. And every time you come out victorious, don't listen to the voice that say, well, you're going to give in again tomorrow, so why bother? Regard each little victory as important, because they can add up. You should keep using your insights. When the insights don't work, you keep trying to figure out new ones, figure out new approaches. That's a really worthwhile use of your intelligence. The intelligence goes into sensuality, that goes into lust, it's pretty worthless. It's taking a talent you have and trashing it. Appreciate the intelligence of renunciation and make it your sport. We're not just being wise in the sense of little books of wise sayings, but you're developing street smarts of a different sort. Street smarts for the Noble Path. And there's a real satisfaction in seeing these things through.